It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday, the 20th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. When President Obama delivers his State of the Union speech tonight, one of the expected topics is cybersecurity. This comes in the wake of the Sony Pictures hack and a week's worth of announcements that serve as a preview to the president's remarks this evening. And whether we're talking about specific policies or assigning blame for the Sony hack, there doesn't seem to be a ton of consensus about what America should be doing in the face of ever-growing cybersecurity threats. We wanted to get a preview of what may be the most cyber-centric State of the Union address ever. Christopher Segoyan is principal technologist at the American Civil Liberties Union. Hi, Christopher.
Hi.
What do you think we might hear from President Obama involving this subject in the State of the Union speech?
What has been announced would be a national data breach law that would require that companies notify individuals after their information has been stolen from a company. There would be a law that would prevent companies from collecting and mining data for commercial purposes about students. And then most recently, we've learned that the president has proposed a law that would significantly ramp up the penalties for various computer crimes. But none of those would actually force companies to better protect the data they hold about us.
What would you actually really like to hear in a State of the Union speech, considering all the context we have of the past few years when it comes to cybersecurity?
As a technologist, you know, I'd like to see the president offer some, you know, basic advice like don't use the same password across multiple websites. And I'm not suggesting that the State of the Union address be turned into some kind of tech support forum, but there are things that people can do, and the government isn't really doing a very good job pushing those to individuals. Moreover, I really do think that the data breaches we've seen over the last year or two really do demonstrate that it's time we think about actually setting basic security standards for companies and for government agencies and then making them actually follow those rules.
So you're talking about a potentially massive piece of legislation that requires certain standards from U.S. companies that might be comparable to something like, I don't know, how the FDA makes sure our food is safe.
I think that if a company is going to hold private sensitive information about Americans, they should follow some basic best practices when it comes to cybersecurity. And time again, when we do see these breaches, their reputations bounce back. They don't suffer major financial damages, and consumers are the ones left holding the bag. And that's just not fair.
Is there anything else that you think is particularly interesting about this moment that we're in?
We're at a time now where technology seems to affect every aspect of what the government does, but there are so few technical experts advising top policymakers, and it shouldn't be surprising that the proposals that flow from the government are those that involve things like liability or immunity, legal concepts that policymakers can easily get their heads around.
Christopher Segoyan is principal technologist at the ACLU. Christopher, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, which computer is the superest of them all? Right now, according to the top 500 list put out twice a year, it is the Milky Way 2. It's in China at the National University for Defense Technology. But when it comes to supercomputing, the race is always close, and America is currently nipping at the heels of China's Milky Way 2. We've been to one of America's fastest, Stampede, down in Austin, Texas. It sounds like this. But the next number one might be in Tennessee at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. Oak Ridge was the champ back in 2012, and as Emily Siner reports, with an influx of funding, it may again be king of the supercomputing hill.
The supercomputer at Oak Ridge right now, called Titan, is the size of a basketball court. It sounds like a jet engine, and it can make 27 quadrillion calculations per second.
It's almost like it's alive. It has a pulse to it. You can feel it in your body when you walk in the room.
That's Buddy Bland, head of the Oak Ridge Supercomputing Lab. These kinds of machines are used to do incredibly complex simulations of real-world things, like analyzing weather patterns over time or predicting new chemical combinations in drugs. bugs. Faster computers mean more scientific breakthroughs. But like any computer, whether it's Titan or your personal laptop, in a few years, it'll be basically obsolete.
Because we can go out and buy a new machine for less than it costs to just pay the maintenance of the old machine.
The U.S. has been a leader in supercomputing for decades, but staying ahead of the pack is pricey. Oak Ridge's next computer, called Summit, could cost up to $280 million. Yet Congress has funded supercomputing with gusto. Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee says it's a priority that stretches across party lines.
This is a case where the Obama administration and I and others in Congress since 2008 have had the same goal. We wanted to double funding for supercomputing.
Alexander gives two reasons. First, national security. Some federally funded machines manage the country's nuclear weapons. Second, private companies can apply for time on the computers to develop products more quickly. For example, Procter & Gamble has used Oak Ridge's Titan to research how the skin might react to its products. And then there's something that has non-monetary value. Pride.
It's like being number one in football. We like the idea of having the fastest supercomputer in the world, and we have had that at Oak Ridge.
Summit is expected to go live in 2017, but Oak Ridge isn't calling it the fastest yet, because by that time, some other country may be building one that's even faster. In Nashville, I'm Emily Siner for Marketplace.
And I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.